Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 24, Text Number 7.
Vaikarika staya sascha.
Vaikarika staya sascha.
Tamasascha ham trivit.
Tamasascha ham trivit.
Tanmatendriya manasam.
Tanmatendriya manasam.
Karanam chirachinmayam.
Karanam chirachinmayam.
Word for word translation. Vaikarika,
Vaikarika,
in the mode of goodness.
Tayasa,
in the mode of passion. Cha,
and
Tamasa,
in the mode of ignorance.
Cha,
also.
Iti,
thus.
Aham,
false ego.
Trivit, in three categories.
Tatmatra,
of the subtle forms of sense objects.
Indriya,
of the senses.
Manasam,
and of the mind.
Karanam,
the cause.
Chit achit,
both spirit and matter.
Mayaha,
encompassing.
Encompassing.
Translation. False ego, which is the cause of physical sensation, the senses and the mind, encompasses both spirit and matter, and manifests in three varieties, in the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. Translation responsively. False ego,
which is the cause of physical sensation,
the senses and the mind,
encompasses both spirit and matter,
and manifests in three varieties,
in the modes of goodness,
passion and ignorance.
Purport
by the servants of Srila Prabhupada. The word chin achinmaya, encompassing both spirit and matter, is significant in this regard. The false ego is the illusory combination of the eternal conscious soul and the temporary unconscious body. Because the spirit soul desires to exploit illicitly the creation of God, he is bewildered by the three modes of nature and assumes an illusory identity within the material world. Struggling to enjoy, he becomes more and more entangled in the complexities of illusion and only increases his anxiety. This hopeless situation can be overcome by taking to pure Krishna consciousness, in which the pleasure of the Supreme Lord becomes the only goal of one's life. Om Ajnati Mirandasya Jnanjana Shalakaya Chakshu Mintamena Tasmaya Shri Gurave Namaha Vijaytanya Manodhisham Sakitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadatusha Pukantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Krishna is speaking the philosophy of Sankhya. This is the title of the 24th chapter. And this past week we've been speaking about, Krishna has been explaining to Sri Uddhava about the material creation, how Krishna is responsible for creating matter and spirit respectively, and how this material nature becomes agitated by Krishna by his glance, and the three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance, of course, become manifest. And these three modes have to become manifest because the material universe, the gross and the subtle, are created for the pleasure of the living entity. The entire creation is there so that the living entity can come and fulfill their pending desires. This is explained in text 5. That Lord Brahma, the creator, he goes through all this trouble, and Krishna allows this universal egg to become created because the living entity has such intense desires to come and fulfill their life separate from him. So this material world is created, has been stated. Now the main thing to understand that these modes of material nature are always in competition with one another. So when we are identifying, of course, with the false ego, as the purpose is explaining, it's a combination of eternal consciousness and the temporary unconscious body. So our eternal consciousness, the spirit soul, is situated in this body, in this dehi, in this material body, and it's identifying with the material body. So there's a mix between two. So you have the matter, which is unconscious, which is dead, and then you have the eternal consciousness residing in that matter, and therefore this matter has life. So as soon as that eternal consciousness is removed from the gross body, there is no life, as we see with death. When the soul leaves the body is not functioning. Although all the necessary organs are there, the heart is there, the kidneys, the liver, there's blood, etc. But the soul is not there. And the main symptom of the soul is that it spreads consciousness all over the body. Therefore, we are able to feel different sensations, different pains, and different pleasures. So the three modes are created and they are activated by Krishna so that the living entity who's identifying with these modes as supreme can actually express their desires. So we know in the Bhagavad Gita, there's an entire chapter which has been dedicated to the modes of material nature. And in that chapter, the characteristics of the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance are explained, and how to overcome those different modes. Basically, how to elevate ourselves from a material consciousness to even transcend the mode of goodness and come to the Vasudeva platform. So the mode of ignorance has been given certain characteristics in Bhagavad Gita by Krishna. And this mode of ignorance, of course, is dedicated to a lot of illusion, bewilderment, laziness, indolence, sleep, etc. So when someone is functioning under this state, they are in illusion about reality. Reality of themselves and reality about what this entire cosmos is about. So as we read in the Nectar of Devotion, in the introduction and different sections of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is explaining a lot about how this mode of ignorance covers the living entity. Because the mode of ignorance is the direct opposite of the mode of goodness. So we have no knowledge, we have no our intelligence faculty is there, but it's not functioning properly. It becomes overwhelmed by the attraction of the physical sensation, by the attraction of thinking that we're the physical body, that we're the gross senses, or the subtle senses, we're our mind or our intelligence. And these different ailments of material consciousness, we're able to detect that in the way in which we reciprocate in our eating, in our sleeping habits, in our recreation, in our reciprocation with others as well. We respond in different modes. We can either respond very passively, very passionately, or be equipoised and not be affected so much about some people's responses or verbal attacks. Now we understand to get to that platform is also not the highest state of being. The mode of goodness has its defects in that it one becomes puffed up by all the knowledge that one has because they're situated above everyone else. So I have a lot of knowledge, I'm learned, and I am happy. You get a lot of people out there who say, yes, I'm very happy. Yes, I have my 4 PhDs. And I have a wonderful family. They don't drink or smoke. We're vegetarian. From birth, this is how I've raised my kids. Or they go to this school. They go to the Steiner school. So it's very sattvic. You know, we don't watch TV. all these different things. We rise early as well. We clean the house. But Krishna is not the center. Therefore, we're still functioning under the mode of goodness, which is great, but it will not take us out of this cycle of repeated sense gratification, also in the mode of goodness. So the mode of goodness is just there to make us easily step forward into inquiring about Brahman. Now, if you're still covered by the modes of material nature, if you're still identifying with gross and subtle matter, then there's no question of you inquiring about Brahman. You cannot ask about spiritual subject matters because you are conditioned in your state. You've accepted your state that this is the highest form of living for me. So the defect of this mode of goodness, we become puffed up. Our false ego still expands. And the typical example Srila Prabhupada is giving is of the philosophers and the scientists. That they have material knowledge. Some of them may even contact some kind of spiritual knowledge about, you know, understanding the universe and tapping into things like astronomy and Vastu and astrology, so many different Vedic sciences. A lot of people have come into contact with that, and for that reason they think that they have so much knowledge. But you can have so much knowledge, you can be a jnani, but if you're not fixing that knowledge in Krishna's service, it's not going to take you anywhere out of this cycle of repeated attachment to the modes of material nature and associating with those modes of material nature. So Srila Prabhupada is explaining in chapter 14, in the first few texts, first 10 texts in that chapter, that this mode of goodness, it's nice, but that's not our goal. Our goal is to actually transcend the mode of goodness and take us to the Vasudev platform when we start inquiring about Brahman, topics related to Brahman. And Arjuna, in that instance, he also starts questioning Krishna, well, how do I actually situate myself above the modes of material nature? Because here we understand, it's quite obvious that, and we can have the example, but because we're addicted to actually suffering, one way or the other, and either the mode of goodness, passion, or ignorance, is all suffering. So we're addicted to these different understandings by these different concocted ideas of what life is about, and we're not actually searching for the absolute truth. Therefore, we keep on wandering birth after birth, right? We get a particular desire, as it explains, we have pending desires, therefore we have to have a playground of the material energy to facilitate our pending desires. And we can do so and the material nature organizes our body. It organizes a situation and environment where we can actually come and express our desires, whether it's Rajagun, Tamagun, or Sattvagun. So that is there. That's there in the material nature, but it is always mixed. And therefore, there's always a competition which mode is going to dominate. During the night time, you have your, you know, the sleep factor comes in. You know, the mode of ignorance weighs heavy on the conditioned soul who's identifying with that mode or with the body. Or someone, as Prabhupada is explaining in one of the purports, that you know, a child may desire to take birth and the cruel mother may desire to kill the child through abortion. We may desire to kill the weeds in a field and they stubbornly take birth again and again. So there's constant competition between the modes of material nature. And we have to know which modes can I become overcome by, which modes do I sometimes function under. And it would be nice if, you know, we could all be above the modes of material nature. Or should I say, if I could be above the modes of material nature. Because on an everyday basis we have to see, am I in the mode of passion? Do I have unlimited desires? Am I longing for this and that? Am I desiring for so many things? Am I into fruitive activity? This is mode of passion. And we know a mode of passion, it's very difficult to fulfill our desires in the mode of passion because the desires are always increasing. They can never be satiated. Or whether we're in the mode of ignorance or the mode of goodness. And Krishna is giving us examples in 14:10, where Krishna is also explaining that there's always competition for supremacy through these modes of material nature. So we can see through our dealings, our activities, our eating, our sleeping patterns, which modes we're operating under. Are we overeating? What kind of foods are we eating? What kind of relationships we are? How do we reciprocate with people? Are we overly passionate? Are we overly ignorant about others that are around us, not understanding that they are also parts and parcels of Krishna? Or do we put ourselves as the center first, and therefore strive for knowledge, strive for our own happiness, forgetting about other people's happiness? So we have these checks and balances given in Bhagavad Gita to see where we're functioning, to see where we're at. So in this text we've been reading today, Srila Prabhupada's disciples are explaining that we struggle to enjoy. And this is something no one will admit, because once again the false ego is so big. You know, I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm going to do with my degree, and I'm going to get a job, and all these things that we're toying in our mind haven't even manifested. So we work all day very hard to try and get some kind of enjoyment. You work hard from 9 to 5 as a karmi or someone who's engaged in fruitive activities, trying to be the proprietor of everything. The other day I don't know what I was doing on the street, book distribution or flyers, and someone gave me their card, and I thought it was from Gora Travel, because it said Gora Tea, and I'm like, oh, okay, Gora Travel, Kijai. And then this lady was like, oh, this is my son's business, and I'm like, okay, this is not Leela Katha Mataji. And it's some other enterprise, and they put there on the card, sole proprietor, something something Sharma. And I just looked at it and I said, you are really convinced that you are the sole proprietor. And at any point, you know, an earthquake can come, a tsunami comes, and then so much trouble. You know, where is our sense of proprietorship? Where is our sense of being the controller? Where is our sense of being the dominator in this world? With just a flick, in one moment, in one second, everything can just go to shambles. And that we don't see, because we're just stuck, you know, in the false ego, thinking, I'm so great. Whereas, you know, no one can actually be peaceful as long as they're situated under the modes of material nature. It's not possible. Because without, you know, we can't speak of peace without happiness. And this used to be on my mind all the time. I used to have a habit, you know, when you're a young child, you just watch everything on the television. And I would watch all these Miss Universe pageants and Miss World and blah, blah, blah. And they have their famous question, you know, what do you want for the world? That famous question they always ask. And then you have all these people who are so on the bodily platform, right? Makeup everywhere, it's shining everywhere, they look like a porcelain doll. Like you can't see the personality behind, because they're just so fake. That's not them. So they get asked all these questions, and they want to win votes, they want to, you know, be Miss Universe or the most beautiful, etc. And they get asked the simple question of what do you want in the world, and they always say world peace. And everyone always applauds, because everyone wants world peace, but they don't know the method for peace. Right? They don't know the method. They think the method is to speak flowery words. Right? I'm going to help in this charity organization, in this, you know, we're going to build schools in Afghanistan, and we're going to send aid to the African countries, and I'm going to spend 3 months in Tanzania or Zambia and feed the AIDS victims. You know, people get, they think this is what will make me happy, and at the back of it, subconsciously, it's what's in it for me, right? I'm going to feel better because I'm extending myself. But of course, there's always some selfish motive. We understand Srila Prabhupada is explaining, yes, you can try and perform all these humanitarian acts, but they're always tinged with the modes of material nature. You always want to get something in return for your good deeds. So as soon as you try and separate even your compassionate nature from Krishna, if you're separating that, then you're not actually going to really benefit anything. When the material body dies, no, your name goes down, who's going to remember that you were in Angola uncovering landmines? There's so many people who've done it. What makes you different? And so the false ego was struggling very hard to enjoy, to become the most popular, to become the most renounced, to become the most simple. But whatever you do in this material world, if you separate it from Krishna, it is a futile attempt. If you separate anything, even if you separate the material energy, all the elements from Krishna, it's a futile attempt. Because the equation of this material world is that you have the jiva, you have the Ishvara, and you have the material nature. And there's an already existing relationship that you can't cut. You know, the material nature is meant, I think it's one of the purports here. In the same text, text number 5, this material world is created so that eventually the living entity, out of mere frustration, comes to realize that actually this world is not for me. All these material attempts I'm making, they're useless. Let me turn towards Krishna. That's our relationship with the material energy. It's not like the buddy-buddy, yes, I'll take care of you. Externally, yes, she'll say, here's a very wonderful body. And here's a very wonderful member of the opposite sex. Just this morning, I was chanting japa, and there were some birds attacking each other. I can't speak bird language, but, you know, you could see it's either over some female counterpart. So there's 5 birds trying to kill each other, and there's one just standing there, right? Who is supreme? I'm going to get her. Even in the animal species, it's there. So we try and do all these different things, the material energies, creating nice bodies, nice situations. You can go to Hawaii, you can go to Bali, you can go to the Bahamas and enjoy, and everything is nice. When at the same time she's kicking you, and you're thinking you're actually enjoying, you're struggling the whole year, you're working hard, you don't have time off, you work hard like a donkey. And then you have 2 blissful days in the Bahamas, and you think this is enjoyment, this is what life is about. Right? And we start getting addicted to that sort of lifestyle, we start thinking this is actual happiness. You work 364 days in a year, or 360 days in a year, and then out of that you get 5 days, you know, where you're completely blissed out, you're on some beach somewhere, everything's great, and you get sunburnt, but that's fine. You were sunburnt in the Bahamas, you know, or whatever celestial places people find on this planet Earth. So there's a great struggle to try and enjoy Krishna's material energy. But it's always such a depressing state because our relationship is that we cannot enjoy the material energy. The material energy is there to kick us. So that existing relationship is already there. And our existing relationship with Krishna, you know, it's eternally there. We're eternally Krishna's parts and parcels, and we're servants of Krishna. So we come here, of course, we try to be servants in other ways. We try and be servants of our dogs and our nation and our boss, etc., etc. The capacity is there. The inclination is there, we see, but it's misplaced. So the relationship that we have with the material energy, it's meant to teach us this world is not a nice place. And if you try and make it a nice place, well, you keep having to come back and suffer all over again. And the happiness that people think that they're experiencing is actually a little, it's a little reduced suffering. So you're not suffering so much, so that equals happiness. Right? You're living in a first world country, you're very happy. You're still gonna get, once in a while, you'll still get diarrhea, or you'll have eczema, or you'll have intense pimples, or whatever. And you go to an undeveloped country, people are still having diarrhea, you know, people are still having eczema, people are still having... So the same sufferings are there. And we're thinking, I'm very happy. This body is just too good for me. And this is the state that most people we find are in this world. They're thinking that the reduced suffering is actually happiness. Whereas in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is explaining that this so-called world peace everyone is after cannot be attained as long as we're still functioning on the false ego. So the peace formula is given by Krishna in 529. And that peace formula explains that unless you actually know who is the proprietor, who is the maintainer, who is the beneficiary, who is the controller, then you cannot speak of any happiness or peace, because you'll always be in anxiety. If you think that you own this piece of land, or if you think that this job is yours for 5 years only and then your contract runs over, there's constant anxiety. The stress will always be there. At the back of your head, you'll always stress, how am I going to pay the mortgage, you know? Economic crisis, how am I going to do this, how am I going to do that? Whereas if you accept that it's Krishna is maintaining everything, He's the cause of all causes, therefore I'm just going to trust in Him. So where's the need of the anxiety, and where's the need of the great attachment to matter? If we understand that everything is belonging to Krishna, Krishna at any minute winds it up, Krishna at any minute takes it again, why should we be attached to it? So we act on that platform, we understand Krishna is the sole proprietor. Okay, I have nothing to be attached to, I have nothing to own or to claim. I won't stress. I'll just worship the Supreme Lord as he asks us to do. So this happens to Brahma all the time. I think on Friday I was given this this pastime. It's in the third canto, when Brahma is creating. And of course Brahma lives for a gazillion years, right? He lives for a very long time, and he also goes to sleep. And when Brahma goes to sleep, he wakes up the next day, and everything he's created is destroyed. So he has to start again the next day. And he's not just creating, you know, like little small things. Like, he's creating the universe, the living entities, everything. Of course, the Supreme Cause is Krishna. Krishna is empowering him. Okay, you be the secondary creator. So Brahma does like this, and he goes to sleep. The next day, he wakes up, complete darkness. And this time he's thinking, how am I going to do it again? So he starts his austerities, his penances. Okay, he's doing it again. He goes to bed the next day, destruction. Right? It's dark. Starts all over again. So this is going on and on and on. And Krishna, I forget which reference, it's Canto 3, chapter 4. Text 29, I think. And Krishna tells Brahma, you know, what need is there for you to be attached to this? Just attach yourself to me. Don't see yourself as the proprietor. Because if you see yourself as proprietor or maintainer, you're just going to end up suffering. You'll be anxious about everything because you think you're the supreme. Right? So if we're thinking that we're the supreme, we control these modes of ritual nature. We're meant to dominate these modes of ritual nature. And then in reality, the reverse happens, of course. We get bashed up by the mode of passion. What has the mode of passion ever done for anyone in this world? If you just analyze, and some of you might be very fortunate, you grew up in very cultured families, but some of us had a good time with the mode of passion. And the mode of passion hasn't done anything good for me. So the stress, the anxiety, being in complete delusion about who you are, what life is about, and how you're meant to become happy. So the mode of passion means you just go with what your body feels. right? You just go with what your heart says. And for them, the heart is the mind, because they can't even understand what's happening in their heart. So people get mental all the time, so they get controlled by their mind, and they learn themselves in disasters. So we're good at this going with the flow, right? What is your body saying? Or should I say, what are your hormones saying? Like when you're young, just explore, just travel and express yourself, and you know, in a very nice way. But behind it all, the reality is just let go, be loose, right? Just enjoy as much as you want, experiment as much as you want. That's what life is about. You're meant to go through tough times so that you can understand life. So when you're young, you can travel as much as you want, you can be as mischievous as you want, you can be as promiscuous as you want, because you're supposed to learn. But this is third class intelligence. Right? This is not really an intelligent person. An intelligent person hears from scripture and understands, I'm not supposed to be situated on the mode of passion, I'm not supposed to be situated on the mode of ignorance, nor am I supposed to eternally, you know, reside on the mode of goodness. I'm supposed to transcend and go to the Vasudev platform and start inquiring about Atato Brahma Jigyasa, about spiritual subject matters. But as long as we're still trying to fulfill our desires through the modes of material nature, it is just suffering. And no one will admit to it, because everyone, when you have a false ego, it means you're in control. You have your universe, you know what you're doing. And no one has any right to come to you and tell you what to do. That's why there's now, we're now studying politics, you have your UN Declaration of Rights. Everyone has their rights. But you have a right to speech, you have a right to do this and do that. And it's based on the body, it's based on your emotions and how fast your hormones are running, right? You just want to blurt out anything that you know based on no authorized book of thought, no authorized book of knowledge. It's all based on, as this verse is saying, physical sensation, right? Our physical body, you know, we're feeling like this, or our mind is feeling like this. So we express that through our activities, through our eating, through our sleeping, through our interaction with others. So this happens when we identify with the modes of material nature. And Krishna says to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna asks Krishna, how do I elevate myself from this position, from being covered by laziness, indolence, sleep, unlimited desires, fruitive activity, mental speculation, knowledge and happiness, Krishna says, you take to full Krishna consciousness. This is Bhagavad Gita 14:26. One who engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, as once transcends the modes of material nature, and thus comes to the level of Brahman. So he comes to understand, I'm not the body, I'm not the mind, I'm not the senses. I don't have a long, eternal, cherished relationship with the modes of material nature. The Prabhupada often explains that the living entity has this long, cherished relationship with the modes of material nature and the material universe. But there's no such thing, because we're not meant to derive any happiness or pleasure from matter. So how we can extricate ourselves from these physical sensations of the mind, of the intelligence, of the body, is to take to full Krishna consciousness, as Krishna is given in Bhagavad Gita. And this full Krishna consciousness is taking up devotional service, bhakti yoga. That is what will destroy this false ego, thinking I'm this, I'm that, or thinking that I'm matter, gross or subtle. So full Krishna consciousness doesn't mean once in a while you perform bhakti. Full Krishna consciousness doesn't mean that once in a while you go to the temple, or you go to the temple for Janmashtami or Varashtami or whatever. Full Krishna consciousness means that you accept that and you try and understand as much as possible that I'm eternally part and parcel of Krishna. So part and parcel, that means you're a fraction, you're attached to a whole. You're a fraction of a whole. Even if you separate yourself, that whole will always be there. You can try and exist separately as that fraction, but you can't be there eternally. So even if you try to be an impersonalist or whatever, you merge into the one, into the Brahman effulgence, you still drop from that because that's an unnatural state for the living entity. So taking to full Krishna consciousness means that you embrace Krishna's instructions. And because we're not pure enough sometimes to understand really what Krishna's instructions are, then Krishna from the heart expands himself as the super soul, as the spiritual master. And you have the assembled devotees to teach us how to perform and put into application the process of devotional service. We have books like Bhagavad Gita, Nectar of Devotion, Nectar of Instruction. So we can't concoct anything. We can't create any other form of sadhana. Our sadhana has already been outlined by the previous acharyas. So this is what we should take shelter of, full Krishna consciousness, and in that way we won't be so induced to act due to our physical sensations, due to the body, the material body and the material mind. But we elevate ourselves by the process of sadhana bhakti. And then gradually that sadhana bhakti will lead us to pure Krishna consciousness. We can't have intense pride and think that we don't have to follow sadhana, but we can just jump start and just go to the spontaneous platform. No one here becomes a doctor by just waking up one day and saying, I'm a practicing GP. No, we don't do that. You don't just wake up and say, oh, I did my bar test and I'm a lawyer. No one does that. And anyone who does that in the material sphere will be seen as, what's wrong with him? You know, he's just nuts. You know, how do you think you can just be a lawyer overnight? Or you had this dream or you had this epiphany that, oh my God, I'm not an engineer, I'm an artist, so I'm going to record my first song. It requires training. And we go through that training. And we have sleepless nights. And we work so hard and we study, we do so many things to get that material training. So we should also do even more for Krishna conscious training. That's why we have sadhana bhakti. That's why the rules and regulations are there, so that we gradually go on to the spontaneous platform. So we can't jump, we can't skip and say, it's been 2 weeks, Prabhu, and I think I'm a gopi now, or I think I have my siddha deha, I know who I am. No, there's sadhana to be performed. That helps our, it transforms our consciousness from material to spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness. We can't jumpstart at any point in our Krishna consciousness. If you do that, your pride swells up. Pride means you think you can do something without qualification. So we think we can access Krishna directly, but we're not qualified. That is pride. So we have sadhana bhakti is meant to give us guidance, to give us protection from all these small weeds that come up simultaneously as we practice bhakti. Now if we chant Hare Krishna, we're feeling blissed out. And at the same time, you know, these weeds that grow of, you know, pride, envy, illusion, these weeds that grow, sometimes they look like, you know, the real thing. You think that, actually, I am pretty advanced, or I can hear the holy name perfectly, I'm in touch with Krishna. Sometimes in the beginning stages we think that. And the acharyas explain, you know, as you perform bhakti, these weeds are growing at the same time. When you plant something in junior high school, when we did agriculture, everyone had their plot for the year and you had to take care of it and you get marked for it. And we know that when you plant something, you keep watering it, at the same time weeds are growing. And you have to pick up the weeds all the time.
Or else, before you know it, the weeds are going to merge into your tomato plants and you won't be able to see what's what. So at the same time, in our bhakti, in our devotional service, we're performing the processes of devotional service, the limbs of devotional service. And at the same time, you can have these unfavorable characteristics growing. So you have to be able to know what's what. Therefore, we take shelter of the scriptures that are given, nectar of devotion, nectar of instruction. And the devotees who have been exemplifying this for years and years, the devotees who are living representatives of what Srila Prabhupada has said by following sadhana bhakti, that now you can see naturally you develop a taste for chanting the holy name. Naturally, you develop a taste for hearing Krishna Katha. And this comes by gradually just following the process, as Prabhupada said. Just read, chant attentively. Not just read and chant and do something else at the same time, but you have to be attentive. So our chant, everything comes from our chanting. Whatever success or lack of success we have, it comes from the chanting. So we should know how to protect ourselves and how to stick to the process.